Thank you, Director General Roberto Azevedo, dear friend, and of course, José Graziano. As a former player in the Uruguay round negotiation, particularly in agriculture. And thanking you for your very frank assessment. I know WTO is a member-driven organization. I know DG is not always comfortable in dealing with his public speeches. So you finished by opening a big question, new architecture. I'll be very short, into account what we do here. And I mentioned, for example, guidelines on the earth issue and the ongoing process of negotiation of investment rules. And when we look at its substance, we are a little bit far from the special and differential treatment philosophy. If I add to that the wonderful breakthrough that was made in New York on the MDGs, it appears for me that maybe, and this is my question, do you share this opinion, Mr. Azevedo? Do you think we, emerging countries, still need to stick to the Part 4 special and differential treatment? And don't you think it would be better using the philosophy of MDGs, of the ongoing job here, to completely change the bargaining power of the developing countries? 80% of these countries are net food importers, and there is a big contradiction between the special and differential treatment and the strategic issue we can handle differently if we play the game. Maybe we can be of a huge contribution to unfreeze or defreeze the long-lasting stumbling positions of the two big blocks. Thank you. Thank you for coming here with us in FAO.
Thank you, Morocco. Thank you for, I think that's a very interesting point you have raised. Egypt, please.
Thank you, Mr. Director General, for a very important presentation. And if some countries and some people might think that with the signing of the Trans-Pacific Partnership and also approaching agreement on the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, the WTO is losing its importance. I'm sure you know that developing and LDCs countries attach so much importance to your work and to the work of the WTO. Having said that, and keeping in mind your assessment of the negotiations prior to Nairobi, my question is that can the WTO benefit more from the work of the FAO in terms of reports and assessment of the state of the world and agricultural food security? Can this help you in an advisory way to guide the negotiations and also to make members realize more the importance of like eliminating domestic subsidies to developing countries and LDCs? Thank you.
Thank you, Egypt. The Philippines, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning to everyone. We are pleased to welcome and hear the address of the WTO Director General, especially with this. We think this is timely in the lead-up to the Nairobi Ministerial Conference. We are grateful for highlighting the common goals and points of collaboration between FAO and WTO. Here in FAO, we are being regularly provided with updates on the negotiations, particularly through the Committee on Commodity Problems, which Brazil chairs and Mr. Boubacar serves as secretary. But it's really different if it's the WTO Director General who gives us the progress on the negotiations. My query refers to the export competition pillar, which you mentioned. And we are glad to know that there's a chance of a breakthrough in this pillar and addressing what is considered to be the most trade-distorting support of all, which is export subsidies. We would appreciate getting more information on the other elements or the elements within the competition, for example, export credits, food aid, because one of the topics being currently discussed in FAO is the monitoring of the food aid transaction and its impact on commercial trade and domestic agricultural production. So we would appreciate more information on the progress on the export competition. Thank you.
Thank you. The Philippines, I think now we can hear from WTO Director General, Mr. Azevedo, on this question. The time probably you gather more ideas for a second round of question, and I would like to note here that the question are only not only restricted to country delegates. So all participants, please, colleagues, everybody is welcome to ask a question. I think it's a good opportunity for us to seize it and ask any question we might have. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Well, thanks for the questions as well. They are very important, and they address very important issues. Starting with the question, let me go in reverse. Let me start with the Philippines. That's a tough question because we still don't know exactly how much we can do. I think in terms of export subsidies, it's pretty clear cut. So you eliminate export subsidies themselves, full stop. The major discussion that we're having now is the phase-in of that elimination. So how long it's going to take for developed countries and how long it is going to take for developing countries. Some are saying immediate elimination, but some are saying that they are not in a position to do that. There are some developed countries that still provide export subsidies in a significant way, and they are not ready to get rid of them immediately. So the phase-in of the elimination is what is being discussed, I think, at this point in time. The problem is that even those who are willing to eliminate their export subsidies, they make linkages to other parts of the negotiation. So they're saying, I would do that within so many years, etc., if something else happens. And these linkages are precisely what's complicating, because we don't know whether this other end of the bargain is going to materialize. So, I have been telling people in Geneva, if these linkages that you're establishing are for real, and if they are as rigid and immovable as you have been portraying them, we will have nothing in Nairobi, nothing, zero. So they are coming to terms with that reality as well, and I don't know what's going to come out, but it will depend a lot on how these linkages work between now and December. Now, on the other areas of export competition, export credits, for example, it's pretty tough. I think you all know that the United States is a major player there. They had even a dispute with Brazil, which included that. So this is a very charged discussion. The U.S. recently has proposed a few elements, but they also included the demand for a safe harbor. So if they are doing those things, you cannot challenge them legally. And a lot of members so far have rejected the notion of this safe harbor. They claim that that would exclude the agreement on agriculture, the disciplines of the subsidies agreement. And again, I don't want to get technical here, but it doesn't look like we're going to have convergence there. On food aid, at this point in time, it's difficult to tell what's going to happen. The disciplines that were there were essentially negotiated in 2008, and we had a number of things. We had essentially two boxes, one for emergency food aid, that we called that a safe box, which still had some kind of constraints, but they were more loosely described. And the role of the host country, so the country that is receiving the aid, is very important, because they would be part of the characterization of whether the emergency exists or not. And there is the other type of a more long-term kind of regular food aid. And what we're looking is precisely what you mentioned, is the monitoring of disruption of productive markets in the receiving, in the countries receiving the aid, whether monetization would be permitted, and if monetization is permitted, by how much. So that conversation was very specific in 2008 in the context of a huge agreement. Now, with no such agreement, I'm not sure how much political capital the countries that provide food aid would have to make the changes in their programs that would be required by the text. So again, in that area, it's not very clear how much we can do. There is reluctance on the food aid providers to change their programs significantly. So it's tough to tell how much is going to come out of that. On STEs, it's a bit easier because a lot of those monopolies are gone anyway. So what is left is very little. To be frank with you, we have not been dedicated a whole lot of time to this STE pillar, of the export competition pillar. But something may come out of that, but it's still not very clear. So we are uncertain how much we can do there. On Egypt, the question on how much can be done to cross-feed, I think, the works of both WTO and FAO, that's precisely what we are trying to look now. The second time that we meet recently, Director General Graziano and myself. Mr. Graziano was in Geneva a few weeks ago. I'm here now, and that's exactly what we're trying to figure out, how much more we can do. I think through your missions you already do some of that. So that is pretty clear. But how much in terms of cooperation between the two secretariats and things like that, that's what we're trying to do. The question that you raised, the issue that you raised about elimination of subsidies to LDCs, export subsidies to LDCs in developing countries, I think that's something that is on the agenda. It has been discussed. For example, I was just answering the question from the Philippines, and one of the things that have been mentioned is that maybe the elimination to LDCs would be immediate and not have to wait or something like that. That is another element. So this differentiation is being taken into account in Geneva. And I agree with what you said that, these regional agreements, they don't in any way affect what the relevance of the organization. The question is not that these agreements exist. The question is whether the WTO is going to deliver as well. That's the question. Because it has always been like that, it's not going to change. Especially in market access, it's much easier to negotiate market access in a regional context or bilateral context than in a multilateral framework. But I think the question is within the WTO, not without. And finally, the question about S&D. I find it interesting sometimes when I read in the press, they tend to characterize us as two main blocks, developed and developing. But anybody who is familiar with what we do there, I mean, this is not true. I mean, there is not there are huge differences within the blocks themselves. In the WTO, depending on the issue, you have completely different configurations. There is no issue that has all developing countries on one side and all developed countries on the other side. It's a very bad, I think, generalization of the situation. I think the problem that we have with S&D, and I agree with you with what you said, that S&D today is much more difficult to talk about than before. I made that point when I was in Doha for the UNCTAD meeting a few years back, still as ambassador of Brazil at that point in time. And what was clear to me is that it was much easier to talk about helping development maybe a decade ago than it is now. And I think the major problem is that there is not, if you look at the developing world, you have so many different realities within the big label of developing countries that makes the conversation difficult. Because sometimes a group of countries come and say, look, we would like to have these things, these flexibilities for developing countries. And sometimes the developed in general would say, that's fine, but if I give that to you, I also have to give it to these other guys here. And I'm not ready to give it to them, I'm ready to give it to you. So that kind of diversity that you have in the developing countries is tough to handle if you are negotiating S&D disciplines, because once you give it to one, you give it to all. So we're trying to be pragmatic in the WTO in trying to see whether, and we did that in Bali, we're doing it now, to see whether the contributions would be commensurate with what people can put on the table, with what each country can put on the table in a pragmatic way, without saying all developing countries are going to do this. So you do what you can. And then, of course, when you sit around the table, the horse trading begins. Huh? And say, oh, well, what you put on the table is not enough. You have to put some more. You can put some more. And then that kind of a pragmatism in the negotiations is what is, I think, the trend today, rather than negotiating S&D disciplines that apply across the board, precisely because of these diversity issues that we see in the around the table at this point in time.
Thank you, Director General. Now we go for a second round of questions. I see Uganda. Please, you have the floor, and then we'll continue. Okay.
Thank you very much, Mr. Moderator. I would like to join my colleagues to thank the two Directors General for very useful information sharing. I would like to build on what the Director General Fowle alluded to in regard to my question or comment. And that is the likely effect of trade on local food systems. With the raging war in food security governance or debate currently, is especially led by the civil society mechanism, and specifically La Via Campesina, is that the corporate-led or the neoliberal food regime, which is reigning, has killed local food systems, which has in turn aggravated food insecurity. So building from that, how much leverage do you think food sovereignty will have in the Nairobi negotiations, and how is that likely to affect the negotiations? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Uganda. Now we go to the next one. L'Algérie, vous avez la parole? L'Algérie? No. Yes. Yes. Angola, sorry. Thanks.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Diretor. É um prazer vê-lo aqui assim, para nesta tribuna. Bonjour, Monsieur le Président. C'est un plaisir de vous trouver ici dans cette tribune. Malheureusement, nous ne pouvons pas parler encore en portugais. Nous espérons que le futur, on peut le faire. Mais de toute façon, j'aimerais bien le féliciter pour le dialogue entre la FAO et l'OMC. Et je souhaite les succès pour cette... Que posso falar? Okay. Não, je félicite por la colaboração entre a FAO e l'OMC e je souhaite le meilleur succès pour cette collaboration. Et la question que j'aimerais bien poser concerne la question de la pêche, en particulier la pêche artisanale. Nous savons que la pêche artisanale a un poids significatif au niveau de l'Afrique, la plupart des pays d'Afrique. Et la réunion sera à Nairobi. Est-ce que nous pouvons être optimistes sur l'action de la subvention pour la pêche artisanale, parce que nous savons qu'il nourrit une partie de la population, c'est important pour la sécurité alimentaire, mais il y a des difficultés pour acheter des bateaux, pour les filets, pour le fuel, le combustible, etc. Et quels sont les principaux obstacles pour arriver à un compromis à ce sujet? Merci.
Merci, Angola. Maintenant, l'Union européenne, vous avez la parole, Florence.
Thank you very much to both FAO and WTO secretariats and Director General for having organized this very interesting event. So the European Union is deeply committed to achieving a meaningful outcome in Nairobi. And this will be crucial for reaffirming the centrality of WTO as the trade negotiating forum. Further, it is important that the first WTO ministerial in Africa delivers a robust and balanced results in all the areas of great interest for least developed countries. In order to do so, however, the EU is of the view that all players will need to show commitment and, most importantly, realism in the coming weeks. It's therefore critical that all WTO members urgently focus on doable solutions and to agree on a limited number of realist deliverables in the short time left, and including the logical linkages in all these areas. So as you said it, Mr. Director General, there is still a long way to go, and we wish the best, and we look at progress with interest here. For instance, my colleague of the Philippines asked this question about export competition. This is also because there is a possible role for the Rome-based agencies. So the REV 4 already mentioned the role of the United Nations, including the WFP, and we are also busy in the margin of the Committee on Commodity Problems to discuss the future of a subcommittee on surplus disposal, where possibly the Rome-based agencies could complement the disciplines under WTO in terms of monitoring and even analysis. So the question is, how do you see the repartition of roles between WTO and the Rome-based agencies, and in this case especially FAO, when it comes to monitoring and analysis of issues regarding agriculture? Thank you very much.
Thank you, European Union. I'll take the last question for this second round. It will be Brazil. Madam Ambassador, you have the floor. You're also the chairperson of the Committee on Commodity Problems. So please, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Babek. So I'd like to express our gratitude and congratulate Ambassador Azevedo for his remarks. Thank you very much for being here with us. We believe that the Doha Round is fundamental for developing countries, and in particular to the future of agricultural development and food security. We have a question about the possible outcome in relation to the cotton sector, so affected by market distortions caused by subsidies, which have put out the international market many least developed countries. Brazil has brought its concerns about subsidies in this sector to the WTO dispute settlement mechanism to showcase the detrimental effects of such subsidies, but also to argue against their legality. We have been proved right. As a consequence, Brazil has received compensations, part of which we have been using in order to support the restructuring and upgrading of the cotton sector in some African countries, with the support of FAO. I just mentioned this as an example of the intricacy of trade support and agricultural development, of which cotton is an interesting case study. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Ambassador. Ambassador Azevedo, I think we can go for the second round before going for a new one. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, and I will take the questions once in the order that they were presented. So, on Uganda's question about the food sovereignty in Nairobi, there are a few elements that, well, first of all, it's difficult to, in the WTO context at least, I'm not sure about here, but in the WTO context, to talk about food security, there are different perceptions about what food security is all about. So some see food security, for example, as self-sufficiency or as a means to settling rural producers, small rural producers in particular. Others look at it more in terms of access to food. So trade and imports are an important element of that. Reducing the distortions that some food security measures in one country provoke in others. So there is a saying there in the WTO which some people use, which is your food security stops when the food security of another person is in play. So that is a difficult conversation in that context. But clearly some elements are going to be present in Nairobi if we're talking about agriculture. So if we're talking export subsidies is clearly a food security issue, whether you look at it from whichever angle you look at it, it is a food security issue. There is the public stock holding conversation, which is still ongoing. It doesn't look like it's going to happen at this point in time. I don't see members covering the distance that they have between them at this point in time. That may change. I have been surprised before, but I wouldn't hold my breath on this one. There is the issue of the special safeguards mechanism, what we call in Geneva the SSMs. That's also part of the conversation in agriculture. Still, that one is also very divisive. I don't see us going anywhere at this point in time. So for Nairobi, there may be some issues of agriculture on the table, particularly export subsidies. More than that, I don't know. More than that, it's difficult to make bets on this. But clearly for after Nairobi, that work is going to continue. So even if you don't get outcomes in Nairobi, it doesn't mean that this is the end of the road. Nairobi is just another milestone. There will be others after that. Angola asked about artisanal fishing, and let me say that. We were talking until 2008, 2009, about fishery subsidies in a very intense fashion. It didn't look very promising at that point in time because even though everybody acknowledged the importance of that, often the position in the WTO is let's get rid of the subsidies, etc. But it's always somewhat like this. Everybody else stops doing that, but I need my space. Right? So that is a difficult conversation because nobody is going to do things without everybody contributing. And some are saying, I can't contribute because I am a developing country or because I am a country that relies on this on these resources very much and I cannot get rid of them, not quickly anyway. And to the extent that only the others do the effort, they don't have a conversation. So, and some of the artisanal fishing are of a very large scale. So even the definition of artisanal fishing is difficult. What defines it? Is the size of the boat? Is it the type of the income? The type of the enterprise? So it is a very complex conversation. At this point in time, in the WTO, that conversation is not happening. That's to be very clear. It is not happening. One thing that we were talking about was more transparency. So whether we could get some kind of agreement where members would notify what they do. Because a lot of the problems we have is that we don't know what is happening. We don't know what is being provided, what is being done by all the players. But this is a very important issue, particularly the small islands in the Pacific, in Africa, small countries who have a coastal line. They are all complaining about this. They want to see this issue resolved. And it is a very important issue. I have no doubt in my mind that after Nairobi, if we have any serious conversation about negotiations, that is going to be on the table. I have no doubts about that. But for Nairobi, I wouldn't be too optimistic. On the EU, thanks for the commitment and for the expression of support. I see that in Geneva all the time, so I appreciate that very much. As far as the cooperation and the role of the specific agencies, of the specialized agencies are concerned, I think everything we do in the WTO at the end of the day, at the very end of the day, it has a legal impact. So we don't take things lightly, and we do things on an impressionistic way. Whatever we do, it has to be sound, it has to be based on evidence, it has to be based on thorough discussions at the technical level, and this is the place for that to happen. It's not in Geneva that you're going to decide food safety standards. It is here. So whenever you define it, that's important. Sometimes you don't think that you have that close connection to the WTO, but every time that a standard emerges here, it is automatically integrated into the legal system of the WTO. Because in our SPS agreement, I think you did that, didn't you, Ricard? Yeah. On the SPS agreement, yeah, there is this explicit language that recognizes and incorporates all the FAO standards as the FAO as a standard-setting body, which means that any country in the WTO that applies or introduces standards which are compatible with the FAO standards, it is automatically recognized as compatible with the WTO rules. So the burden of proof is on the challenging party. If you go beyond, and you can do that, go beyond, the burden of proof is on you to show that you're going beyond that, but you're still compatible with the rules of the WTO. So everything that you do here in that setting, in that kind of issue, is very important, and I think that what we are trying to see, Director General Graziano and myself, is to see whether there are any other areas where we can do more and how we can do that, even if it's not from a legal perspective, but something that is from an organizational perspective, something sound and something that builds the way to future agreements or future standards or future negotiations. I don't know. But you are a big part of that. Often what we do as Director Generals is follow your lead. So to the extent that you can tell us the way, we're more than happy to follow. I'm sure he's nodding, so he agrees. So, and I definitely agree with that. So that's the way forward, I think. But there is a very close relationship between the two. In Brazil, thank you very much. I think what you said is quite true, and I think that the Brazilian case in the WTO on cotton was a very symbolic one, because it was not only about cotton, it was about the role of the subsidies and the distortive nature of these subsidies. Today, I have no doubt in my mind that the relevance that the cotton issue has in the negotiations is only due to that particular dispute that brought to the fore, you know, the asymmetries that exist in the production and trading of cotton products. So I am not sure how much you can do in terms of cotton for Nairobi. The cotton four countries have made a proposal recently. It's a very ambitious proposal. I don't think it's going to fly the way that it has been tabled, but that's the nature of negotiations. We have to see between now and December how much we can get from there. But it's a tough issue. Whatever happens in Nairobi, I'm sure that it will continue after Nairobi. Because it's not going to be solved then, but the issues that have been raised are extremely important. Thank you.
Thank you, Director General. I think I also want to confirm also at the technical level we are increasing our cooperation, and I'm very happy to see the two heads of the organization agree and are committed to that. We'll go, I think this will be probably the last round of the question and answer. I have three who have asked for the floor. Please try to be brief so we can close on time. Kenya, please.
Thank you, moderator. On behalf of the Kenya delegation, let me take this opportunity to thank the Director General of FAO, Dr. Graziano, for providing this opportunity to the Director General of WTO to come to Rome and brief the permanent representative on the preparations for the ministerial meeting that is going to be held in Nairobi. We, as the Kenya government, are so proud to host the first WTO meeting in Africa. And as the Director General of the WTO has briefed us, the negotiations are going on, the consultations are going on, and it's not an easy task because there are many, many issues that are coming up And you can see from the various questions that have been asked by the participant. The chair of the ministerial meeting, our Minister for Foreign Affairs, Abasida Amina Mohammed, has been consulting widely and in different formats with a view to bridging the gaps among the members on the various issues that the Director General has outlined this morning. We strongly support the chair of the ministerial meeting and you, Director General, in your efforts to find a package for Nairobi that is meaningfully balanced and acceptable by all. As you have stated, it's not going to be an easy task. But we urge all the members to engage constructively in the ongoing consultation, given the limited time to the Nairobi conference. The government of Kenya expects the Nairobi outcome to be reflected in a ministerial declaration, and we urge all of you to work towards this realization. Regarding the preparation, let me just briefly inform the members that we are indeed happy to inform that the preparations are on course. And as you, many of the members of WTO know, the venue will be at KICC in Nairobi, and the registration and accreditation will still take place in KICC, near KICC. The National Preparatory Committee and the WTO Secretariat have circulated a number of information notes regarding to the conference, and many of them have already received them. This is on the event organizer, the hotels, that is the designated hotels, the visa and the health requirements. And the information notes have been formed and as they're part of the logistic brochure, which has been distributed. The National Preparatory Committee has also held information sessions for the delegates. There was one in July in Geneva, WTO. And the second information session where the committee will provide members with more information on the final logistical preparation is scheduled to be held in Geneva, I think at the beginning of December. We are so thankful to the WTO, who has been working closely with the National Preparatory Committee, and the WTO has so far expressed their satisfaction with the level of the preparations. May I also inform the members of WTO that the Kenya government has also designated our Kenya Airways as the official carrier of the ministerial conference delegates, and the Kenya Airways has also committed to offer discounted air tickets fares to all the delegates that will be coming to Nairobi for this conference. And we are therefore encouraging all the delegates who are coming to Nairobi, where possible, you can contact the Kenya Airways for discounted tickets. Chairperson, in conclusion, I wish to assure all of you that Kenya is committed to host a successful ministerial conference, and we are therefore seeking the support of all the WTO members to achieve and to ensure we achieve the objective of this conference. We are therefore looking forward to welcoming all of you to Nairobi in Kenya in December for the ministerial meeting. Thank you so much, Director General, for that information, because many people did not have the information. But from this briefing, I think now many people know the issues that are at hand. And we look forward to welcoming you and your delegation in the Nairobi conference. Thank you so much. We look forward to all of you who are here informing your delegates on the issues of the WTO meeting in Nairobi. And once you finish the official part of the conference, we also urge you to take some time to visit the country and to see the Kenya that we have been hearing about. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kenya. As I mentioned before, this will be the first, actually, WTO ministerial conference in Kenya. So best wishes for a successful conference, and we really hope to see a good outcome of that. We'll go to the next speaker. Will be Hungary, please. You have the floor.
Thank you very much. First of all, I would like to express appreciation for the initiative. I think these kinds of consultations between agencies are extremely useful. I would have a simple and general question. Pope Francis recently several times spoke about, with some criticism, about the role of markets, especially in the ICN2 meetings in November, and also included this in his recent encyclical, Laudato Si, saying that the preeminence of the markets and the market priorities – and the primacy of profit, reduced food as commodity, subject to speculation, and an obstacle to food security and to fight against hunger. I would like to ask you what is your view and opinion on these sentences expressed by the His Sanctity. Thank you.
Thank you, Hungary. The last speaker I have on my list in the back, please. If you would introduce yourself also. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. My name is Darana and I work here in FAO. I would have a question regarding public stockholding and domestic sourcing in particular. How do you see the current discussions in that theme, and what do you think will be the main upcoming issues as a permanent solution to the theme is being sought? Thank you.
Thank you for the question. Now we give the floor back to Director General Azevedo to address those questions. You have the floor, sir.
Well, first of all, let me thank the delegation of Kenya for the words of support and encouragement for all of us to come to Kenya and to stay in Kenya. I definitely intend to do that myself. I hope others do as well. I don't know that it will work out. I did want to enjoy the weekend in Bali, and we all know how that ended. Let's hope that in Kenya the weekend will be a little bit more relaxed. But I'm very happy to say that that Kenya has been following up on everything that we have tried to get so far. So the installations are very good. The security arrangements are very good. The logistics, I think, are working out just fine. So I'm very happy with the cooperation that we've had so far with and from the Kenyan government. And I truly recommend those of you who are considering coming to be there, because I think it may be a very exciting ministerial conference in many different ways. So thank you very much once again for that. Hungary asked about the words of Pope Francis. I met him only once. We talked about soccer. So I have no clue what he thinks about the markets and food security. We have to have a conversation about that at the right time. Look, I think as far as markets are concerned, they are a reality. So you have to deal with markets, and you have to realize that markets have their limitations as well. But they are an important factor. The conversation, I tried to make the point earlier before here, that the conversation on food security involves many different elements, because sometimes, like I said, the food security programs and measures that you put in place in your country to achieve certain policy goals affect the rights and the food security of other countries. So how do you find that balance, how do you strike that balance, is precisely what a multilateral forum permits, is that you discuss these issues, having all different types of views and all different types of opinions being put on the table. These are extremely sensitive issues, highly charged politically, so they're not easy to handle, and the only way to do it is, I think, by listening to everybody and walking into the room without preconceived notions about any silver bullet. Be it the market, be it the government, be it the public, there are no silver bullets for food security. So you have to look at this from all the different perspectives and try to find a way forward. So you ask for my view, that's my view. Finally, on the public stockholding and the issue of domestic sourcing, look, public stockholding is also a very tough issue, because it's not a one issue or a one program. There are different types of public stockholding depending on the country, depending on the programs, depending on how you do it. And the disciplines of the WTO are very flexible in that sense. In fact, For example, if you have public stock holding and you are acquiring the product at market prices, there are no limits. So you can buy as much as you want at market prices and distribute at whatever price you want, even for free if you want to. There are no discipline. I mean, it's not that there are no disciplines. There are no constraints on that at all. So you can do that as much as you want. If you, however, are acquiring the production at a price which is higher than the market, then the question of subsidization comes into play, because that may be perceived as a subsidizing program and not as a food security program, because you can acquire like at market prices for as long as you want and as much as you want. If you are buying it at administered prices, then you have to account that and count that portion against your entitlements for subsidization. The distribution is less of a problem. So if you are distributing at subsidized prices, there are essentially no limits to that, and you can do it as much as you want. There are no constraints there. And then you begin to get very technical about how do you calculate that portion of the price which is above the market price, because it's not against the market price. It's about a price that you notified when you undertook the commitment, and it was usually referenced on a 1988 to 19-something period. Then it gets really complicated. And then now the conversation is about what about inflation? Inflation is not taken into account. How do you measure it up? It is an extremely complex conversation. We are just a few weeks from Nairobi. Clearly, that conversation is not going to be finalized between here and there, especially because I don't see the kind of technical interaction which would be required for this kind of outcome to come up. What is important, I think, nonetheless, is that whether or not you achieve that permanent solution by December, we negotiated a very important instrument, which is this peace clause, which means that as long as you are looking for this permanent solution, it hasn't been achieved, you cannot challenge anybody's programs that are eligible under the conditions that are there until the permanent solution is found. So at the end of the day, frankly, in some situations, some are claiming that some countries even don't want to find a permanent solution because the peace clause is good enough. Others are saying, no, this peace clause has a number of constraints that I don't like. I need the permanent solution. And if you look at the WTO membership in general, there are not many countries who have a problem with the limit, because the caps are very high. And in fact, I think one country had a problem. And now maybe two, I don't know. But most countries don't have a problem. So it is very sensitive, it is very important, clearly for one country, maybe two, I don't know. But it is something that has been, for the moment, taken care of with the peace clause. But I think that's not enough. I think we have to continue this conversation, let alone the importance for these one or two countries. Also, from a systemic perspective, I think you need to find a solution that takes care of a kind of program which is important. It's not going to disappear in the immediate future, I don't think. So that's what I think we are at this point in time. No immediate solution for that, but with something that takes care of the issue in a pragmatic way for the time being, at least.
Thank you, Director General. I think just a small reminder what has been said by both Directors General is on the 9th of December, we'll have the launch of the flagship publication, The State of Agricultural Commodity Market, SOCO, and it addressed the issue of trade and food security. That will be in time for the WTO Ministerial Conference in Kenya, and then we really hope that will help to address some of the complex issues between trade and food security. With this, we come to the conclusion of our event. Again, Director General, we thank you very much. We'll give you the floor for any closing remarks that you would like to give. Please.
I just wanted, because I didn't mention, I know that note taking is sometimes tricky, that we will put my statement on the WTO internet site. So if you are interested in that, it will be available.